Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
Dave Feschuk in here from the Toronto Star. Final hour of Overdrive here on TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. France is through to the World Cup final. They got past Belgium 1-0 earlier this afternoon. It's England-Croatia tomorrow at 2 p.m. right here on TSN Radio. World Cup final 11 a.m. on Sunday. Again, exclusively right here on TSN 1050 here in Toronto. Mark Sacchino will join us a little bit later in the hour. Good buddy from Golf Talk Canada. New schedule for the PGA Tour next year. I don't know if you saw this, but
I did.
They're moving the PGA Championship up to May, which I like.
Same here.
Because I always hated the break between the Masters and the U.S. Open. It's too long.
Yeah. No, it makes too much sense. And the gist of it is they're trying to get the golf season done by the end of August.
Yes. Yeah, because when football starts, you're in trouble. So Zucchino will join us later in the hour. We'll get into that. The Phil versus Tiger for $10 million. A lot of different things going on in the golf world. We haven't talked a lot about the signing down at Tampa today. Nikita Kucherov gets an 8-year extension at $9.5 million per. Now, he is a spectacular talent, and I would probably make the same move if I was Steve Yzerman. But there is a ripple effect to this because they continue to be linked to Erik Karlsson, although that link changes every single day depending on who you talk to.
Yep.
Now it sounds like Dallas is back in the driver's seat for acquiring Karlsson. But they can still fit Karlsson in this upcoming season with a couple of moves, a tinkering move here or there. But this summer they've signed Kucherov long-term, Ryan McDonough long-term, and JT Miller long-term, and they already have Hedman and Stamkos locked up long-term. I'm not sure you can bring on Karlsson and sign him long-term. Unless Steve Yzerman can pull a rabbit out of a hat, which he didn't really do here with Kucherov. He gets full credit for selling Stamkos at $8.5 million per year. Hedman at $7.8 might be the best contract in the league.
Incredible.
He is right there with Doughty and Karlsson. That's the best three defensemen in the world. And for him to sign long-term at $7.8 million per is just an absolutely ridiculously team-friendly friendly contract. Kucherov, though, at 9.5, that's not team-friendly. It's not, because he's a winger. You know, wingers don't generally get the big money. Patrick Kane got 10.5. Patrick Kane won three cups, MVPs. Kucherov doesn't have that. Kucherov was going to be an RFA after next season. Patrick Kane was coming up to UFA status. He deserved that kind of money. But Kucherov probably got what you would expect him to get.
Yeah, I think he got what you'd expect him to get. I mean, 9.5, it's a good number. But you know what? You're right. It breaks the mold a little bit in Tampa because Steve Yzerman had been able to convince guys like Stamkos and Hedman to take a little less because of where they're living, because there's no state tax. And so you might have expected him to be able to get Kucherov at a slightly lower number given the circumstance. Because you got to put it in context. It's an interesting conversation about the way the tax situation in these places skews things. But to get the take-home pay that Nikita Kucherov is going to get in Tampa on this $9.5 million AAV, which is about, he's going to take home about $5.8 million in Tampa. You know how much he'd have to earn in Toronto to take home $5.8 million? He'd have to earn a cap hit of $12.4 million. So Steve Yzerman's playing with a huge advantage in Tampa because his cap hit of $9.5 million is the equivalent of a $12.4 million cap hit in Toronto for the player to take home the same amount of money in his jeans. And so you would think he might have been able to get more of a discount out of Kucherov. And I give Dan Milstein, who is Kucherov's agent, Nikita Zaitsev's agent, a lot of credit for this negotiation because he came out on top in this.
Yeah, listen, that's what he should be getting.
Sure.
Because I'm sure Yzerman came to the table saying Stamkos is at 8.5, Hedman's at 7.8.
Yeah,
Hedman just won the Norris. That's our limit, 8.5. And Kucherov obviously came back and said, let me get this straight. I have more points than Stamkos. I'm younger. I don't have injury problems. You're telling me I'm going to take his money? Why? Why would I do that? So Kucherov deserves more than Steven Stamkos just based on what he's done the past couple of years. I think he's a better player than Stamkos. doesn't score as many goals necessarily year over year, but Stamkos with the injury problems, being a little bit older than Kucherov, I understand why Kucherov came to and said, listen, I want to get paid more, and I think Yzerman realized that he had to pay him more. But this idea, again, to your point, that the state tax and the real money going into their jeans is certainly a benefit that Yzerman has used to his advantage, doesn't mean that the player has to accept it. Like Carlson going to Tampa, I think just based on principle alone, he wants exactly what Doughty got.
Yeah.
Doughty got $11
million. Yeah.
I think even though taxes in California are a lot different than taxes in Florida, based on the principle alone, and I would think the PA would want to be included in this as well, Carlson, if he ends up in Tampa, you need to give him $11 million. You have to.
It's certainly a case to be made. I mean, the only downside, the only counter to it, if I'm sitting in a room with Erik Karlsson, is I say, yeah, but Drew Doughty never broke his ankle, never had a piece of his ankle sawn off because of a lingering injury that we're still not sure about here, mm-hmm. Erik. And so that's where you can kind of come back on Karlsson and say, you're not Drew Doughty, because Drew Doughty's been bulletproof, essentially. And by the way, Drew Doughty's won 2 Stanley Cups, you know, so he's been a winner. He's been a bulletproof, you know, pretty injury durable guy. You're not in that category of player, would be my counterargument to it. And I would if I'm in Tampa, I'm saying, hey, ask Steve Stamkos about why he didn't take the money from the Leafs and why he came back here. And ask Victor Hedman about what it's like to earn $7.8 million here. You take home a lot more when you're in a non-state tax jurisdiction like Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the arguments you're going to make.
Oh, that's going to be a sales pitch.
Carlson doesn't have to accept
this. That's my point. He doesn't just have to accept that Florida has different taxes. The salary cap in the NHL is what it is. And you can ask for upwards of, what is it, 20% of the cap?
20, 25.
No one's going to get that. No one ever has gotten that.
No, but 20.
You can ask for it. And Erik Karlsson's counter will probably be like, all right, fine, I'll walk and someone will give it to me. And maybe a team like Vegas, where they don't have a state tax either, but they're going to give me $11 million because they have a lot more cap space.
Well, it's interesting. They got huge. Like, you look at these teams. You got Tampa, Florida, obviously. You got Vegas is a non-state tax jurisdiction. You got Dallas in Texas being a non-state tax jurisdiction. And Nashville. Those 5 teams, they should be better than the rest of the league. Based on this.
It's a massive advantage.
In a hard cap universe where there's no accounting for this state tax advantage, they should be better. They've got more money to play with, essentially, in terms of take-home pay on offer.
Yeah, and now it's on you to be the salesman and to sell them on that, because, again, the players don't have to accept it. The players can be like, that's great, I'll take the no state tax on $11 million as opposed to $8.5 million.
Well, of course.
Because then I get more money.
Yeah.
Why would you? That's what it's about. And I don't believe that the players have any obligation to do teams favors ever. I've always been against that.
No, they don't have an obligation, and yet teams are able to convince guys that they should.
Well, and that's in large part because of the culture. Yeah. If you don't do this, you're going to lose, or some guy's got to go out the door. Do you want to see little Billy have to leave? We're going to have to send him to the American Hockey League because you got that extra $2 million.
And we saw it last summer when Connor McDavid got his contract. There was all that talk that he actually gave some money back at the last minute. He put some money back into the kitty,
right,
back into the Oilers' pot, so that he wouldn't feel bad and wouldn't be embarrassed about taking too much of the pie. And you know what? It's amazing that the teams have been able to convince guys that. I've talked to so many agents over the last handful of years who've been saying, I want to see a guy get his full 20%.
Right.
Connor McDavid should get the full 20%.
Absolutely.
He is a max player if there is a definition
of a max
player. If
there's ever been a max player at his age, where he's coming off back-to-back Ted Lindsay Awards, he is the best player in the league. And if he's not, he's right there with Crosby. It's him or the other.
Right.
And he had the opportunity to get it, and he didn't. And he didn't do it, I think, again, because of the blowback.
Yes.
I believe that was his agency saying, we can market this, that the Oilers were going to give us $13 million, but we said, no, just give us $12.5 or whatever it
exactly.
was.
Exactly.
So that you come off as Connor the good guy, you know, this Robin Hood type figure that is willing to spread the wealth because you really want to win. So it's not as much about make sure the other guys get paid, because the cap is what it is. Guys are going to get paid. They're gonna pay to the limit. But it's more about proving to your fans and to the media that you're so charitable because you want to win.
Right.
That's why you're giving the money back.
Right. But there is also, in a universe like this, like, it's a hard cap. It's not the NBA. The NBA cap is so complicated because there's exceptions to the cap. But there are no exceptions to the cap in the NHL. Except, outside of the Robita Island situations. But there's no way you can, there's no way you can pay your own players more like you can in the NBA. You can't exceed the cap to pay your own players like you can in the NBA. And therefore, if I'm Connor McDavid, I say, I'm going to throw $750,000 back into the pot here every year, nearly $1 million, because that's another player. That's another entry-level contract.
If you trust that the GM knows what he's doing.
Well, yeah, you should.
And that's the gamble.
There you shouldn't.
That is the big gamble. And there is a spin here when it comes to the Maple Leafs. And I, quite frankly, I think this Kucherov deal actually should benefit Kyle Dubas. Because if Kucherov, who is coming off 100 points and 85 points the past 2 years, and has probably been the best winger in the game, even with Hall doing what he did this year, even with Patrick Kane being who he is, even Ovechkin putting up the goals that he's been putting up, Kucherov, if he's not at the top of that list, he's right there.
Well, yeah, I was just looking at it. The last two seasons, the only guys in the league that have scored more goals than Nikita Kucherov are named Alex Ovechkin and Patrick Laine.
Exactly.
Last 2 years combined.
There you go. So Kucherov getting 9-5, deeper in his career with much more sample size and much more leverage means, A, Nylander's not going to get close. He's not going to get close. And this idea that Marner is going to be pushing for double digits, I just don't see it happening.
Well,
if Kucherov gets 9-5, Marner's not getting anywhere close to 9-5.
But here's the caveat, Hayes. It depends when these guys sign. Okay, it depends. Like, Nylander's got to sign before the season. We understand that. But so his numbers are in the book. And you're right. Based on what he's done in this league so far, that's a, you know, the fact that Kucherov, who has scored more points in the past two seasons combined than anybody in the league not named Connor McDavid, and has more goals than anybody not named Ovechkin and Laine, yeah, Nylander's not in that conversation.
No, he's not
so
even close.
Let's knock that down to the two-thirds level. Let's talk six-ish million.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, let's talk. So you're right. This helps Kyle Dubas on William Nylander. But Mitch Marner, that's to be determined, because he can wait a year. And if he's playing like Mike Babcock says he's playing, with John Tavares as his centerman beginning game one, opening night against the Montreal Canadiens in October, well, I got news for you. Like, Mitch Marner could be getting in the nines pretty quickly. The conversation around Mitch Marner could change very quickly based on the fact that he's not starting out on the fourth line or the third line. He's not playing with the guys on the bottom of the roster. He's playing with a guy at the top of the roster in a way he's never had a chance to. He's never had full 82 games as a top six player in this,
no,
on
he
this team.
Even last year, it took half the year before they put him up with Kadri and Marleau.
And then he led the team in scoring
right.
in the regular season and the playoffs.
But even with that said, Kucherov 100 points and then 85 points.
Right.
So he's got it. He's not going to be able to put himself in that position. I think he had, what, 69 points this year? The year before he had 62 or 63. Marner's a spectacular talent and a great player. And I'm not saying he won't get paid or shouldn't get paid. But I think this is the limit, and I can't see him getting to that limit.
For a winger.
For a winger. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Where because of the position you play, it takes away from your value. You're nowhere close to as valued as center icemen or defensemen or goaltenders. So you're never going to get to that point. Kucherov, again, has much more sample size, has put up many more points, and will continue to do that, or at least have that ability when it comes to the comparison with Marner, because he's only got one more year if he holds out.
Yes.
And it's not a true holdout. He's got one more year left on his entry-level deal, which the point I'm making is he doesn't have to sign an extension this summer. But let's say he goes out next year and puts up 85 points. That's still not Kucherov.
No. No, so, it's not. But they're not good. Like, I mean, Kucherov's a few years older. He's got a lot. He's 25 years old.
Right.
He's been in the league longer. But I'm saying Kucherov in the last 2 years, which are his two best years by quite a lot, you know, he's averaged, what, 92.5 points.
And you're buying up UFA years here, a lot
right.
more of them, where you won't be doing that with Marner.
But I'm saying he's averaged 92.5 points at age 24, 23. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility if Mitch Marner's playing 82 games with John Tavares that he can get into the 90s pretty easily.
I think he can too.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he won't at any point, and maybe he will this year, but if he does this year, it's going to be once.
Right.
You know, and listen, his sales pitch is going to be a good one. And the Leafs don't want to mess around with him. The Leafs are going to want him on this team. He's an integral part of the team. But I think Kucherov, at the very least, has set a limit. Like, so there have been some rumors out there, some reports, that Marner's camp wants to attach themselves to the Matthews camp. And what Matthews gets, obviously, that's what Marner needs to get. That's not going to happen. I even if Marner puts up 100 points next year and Matthews puts up 80, I still don't think it's going to happen.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's an interesting conversation, and it's going to the fact that Mike Babcock is planning on playing the guy with John Tavares changes the conversation, because as you pointed out, Mitch Marner is not a guy that's been gifted with great line mates for the majority of his time here in Toronto.
Although the power play has always gone through him.
True.
That is a huge benefit that he's had.
Yep.
The power play last year, now he worked it beautifully. He's a magician on the power play. You give him open ice, this guy can do stuff that very few players can. But literally it went through him last year.
And but the interesting thing was the guy's grousing about not getting power play time like the Austin Matthews camp. Mitch Marner per minute on the power play was one of the top players in the league. Mm-hmm. In terms of point production, you know, so that was Mike Babcock's conundrum in a lot of ways. You know, like Matthews wants to play more, but the Marner unit is so much better in terms of being able to produce on a dime. So, you know, it's going to be intriguing, but you're right. Like, this is a pretty good day for Kyle Dubas in a lot of ways because it sets a bar that is, you know, very tangible for both Nylander and Marner. And I think the bar is, as you say, it's a lot lower than some of those camps have been sort of leaking stuff out and trying to get these, you know, this double digit, you know, yes, 10 million esque into the conversation for these players. It's not going to happen if Nikita Kucherov's making 9.5.
No, there's been a lot of sensationalism surrounding these conversations for a couple of years that these guys are going to just hit absolute home runs. And we had Mike Johnson in here last week, and he compared, I think it was Nylander to Nikolaj Ehlers.
Mm-hmm.
And Ehlers signed around $6 million, yes, give or take. And that's reasonable. And I think Marner and Pasternak is a reasonable comparison. Pasternak signed 6 years at like $6.7 million.
Yep.
Now, slightly different games. Pasternak has benefited from playing on maybe the best line in the league with Marchand and Bergeron. But look at what he did in the playoffs. Like, that line went through Pasternak. And if that is what he got just a year ago, those are going to be the comparisons. And at some point, Dubas and the Maple Leafs are going to have to put their stake in the ground. And the same thing's going to have to apply with Matthews. Like, Matthews is an RFA. He's coming at it from a different position of leverage than a guy like John Tavares. Tavares was a UFA. He could have gone anywhere he wanted to.
Yes.
Of course he's going to get more money. You're going to have to give him more money. You're going to have to load it up so that it's lockout proof. You're going to have to give him all the guarantees, no trade, no movement, et cetera, et cetera. If you're an RFA, you're in a different spot. And the league has changed a lot where these young guys are getting paid and they're getting these big deals early into their career, and I understand why they do that. But it's got to benefit the team in the end.
Oh, no doubt.
The team has to make sure they come out at least with a draw, if not a win.
Yeah, especially if you're asking for security, you know, after you've only played 2 years in the league, you know, you're going to have to give something up. You're right. It's not even comparable to the John Tavares situation. And you might compare the money and you might say, hey, if he's going to be an $11 million guy, Austin Matthews has to be an $11 million guy, but they're not incomparable leverage points here in their careers. So, you know, that's going to be a fascinating conversation. And in a lot of ways, if I'm Matthews and I'm Marner, I'm waiting. Because as much as I want the security, I also want another year of statistics on a team that's going to be awfully good, that's suddenly loaded in the top six and is going to have two dynamite lines that Mike Babcock can't possibly suppress by playing Leo Komarov 20 minutes a game because Leo Komarov ain't around anymore.
No, exactly. How about this report out of The Athletic in Montreal that the Canadiens are no longer negotiating with Max Pacioretty, and essentially they're just not going to negotiate with him. And the report is suggesting that they've basically told the Pacioretty camp, I don't know if it's directly or indirectly, you're going to get moved at some point. Which wouldn't surprise anybody. People have been bracing themselves for Pacioretty getting dealt. But the idea, if this report is true, that the team has just shut down negotiations, seems like a strange strategy. Like, why would you take that leverage away from yourself? Why would you allow that to get out? That you're done and you're trading him? Like, even Ottawa is putting forth a front like they're trying to negotiate with Carlson.
You have to. It's the only sensible negotiation point if you're trying to really work a trade in the background is that you have to let every other team in the league at least somewhat believe that it's possible you're going to sign him and it's possible that things will work out between you. So you have to wonder, like, whose interest is this? In whose interest is it to have this leaked to The Athletic in Montreal? And, of course, you might think it's the agent.
Yes. There are two parties involved here. Mark Bergevin wouldn't leak this. It's hard to imagine. Because Bergevin, it doesn't seem like a lot gets out. You know, they operate the same way the Maple Leafs operate in terms of allowing news to break, especially with player negotiations and potential trades. And
Pacioretty's in an interesting situation because he just left Pat Brisson. you know, people will tell you it might have been some, it might have had something to do with the fact that Brisson and Bergevin are quite close. They're, you know, they're
best friends,
old-time buddies, long-time buddies. And now he's with Alan Walsh, who, as anybody who has follows Alan Walsh on Twitter knows, Alan Walsh is probably the most confrontational, cantankerous agent in a business of guys who are generally not like that. Guys who are very demure in general and aren't very confrontational, at least publicly. So, you know, the idea that Alan Walsh leaked this, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I could guess, and I would bet that Alan Walsh is probably upset that the Montreal Canadiens aren't doing what he wants them to do regarding Max Pacioretty.
But that's the thing. Nobody knows what Max Pacioretty actually wants here, because there have been reports that there was a deal in place for him to go to L.A., I believe it was, prior to the Kovalchuk signing, and Pacioretty turned it down.
Yeah.
You know, so what are you looking for? What are you trying to achieve here? He's got 1 year left. Really good cap number. I think it's like 4.25. Now, he's coming off an awful season. Pacioretty was terrible last year, and the Habs were terrible. But he is the captain of your team. He is a guy who's capable of scoring 30-plus a year. He's done that pretty consistently throughout his career.
Yeah, give him that.
So, if this is out there, it just seems like one more stone being thrown at the Canadiens. You know, like, it's just one more barrier that's landed on top of them, and they just can't dig themselves out of it. I mean, they're a mess in Montreal.
It's a total mess. I mean, if you observed Mark Bergevin at the NHL draft, which I happen to do, I mean, he looked like a beaten man in a lot of ways. Like, as much as he's a flamboyant character and he dresses better than everybody else and he's a good-looking man, he didn't have his usual swagger. And you heard him talk about it. I remember being in one media scrum where he talked about how, whether I'm going to be here or not, it's in my best interest to look out for the future of this franchise. Like, when do you hear a GM saying, I have to worry about what happens to this franchise after I'm gone? Guys just don't do that.
No.
And it's the guy who does it is the guy who's contemplating life after being the Canadiens GM, which is probably a wise move, because it's hard to imagine he's going to be in that job for a particularly long time.
Well, I don't see how they're going to dig themselves out of this. I mean, I said last week, I think Carey Price has more pressure on him than any other player in the league, and I think he basically has to win a Vezina for them to make the playoffs. Because Shea Weber's out until late December, early January. They're not very good anyway. They still don't have a center. They're terrible.
That's an interesting philosophical question. When you have a guaranteed contract coming to you that's kicking in the fall, that's going to pay you $10.5 million on average for the next 8 years, is that pressure or is that security?
Well, but in that market, it's pressure. From your standpoint, it should be security in terms of life. You know, that money's fully guaranteed regardless of where you end up. But it's just one more thing that's going to be on his plate. All of a sudden, Price becomes the highest paid goalie in the history of the game.
Yeah, and the problem is, like, you're right. There's almost no level he can play at that will satisfy people that contract's a good contract.
No. Like, if you're the seventh best goalie in the league, it's like, well, those other six guys are making $4 million a year.
Yeah,
you're exactly. Making $10.5 million.
Exactly.
Like, you sign that deal, as you should. If that kind of money's in front of you, of course you're going to sign it. Nobody would say no to that. But what comes with that is the expectation you're going to be the best goaltender in the league for 8 years. People will give you a pass here or there. And if the team is just an unmitigated disaster in front of you, which I expect them to be, you're going to get some leeway. But he can't have like a 9-12 save percentage.
No.
You know, like, he's going to have to steal a lot of games.
Well, and by the way, this is a guy who was .900 this year, playing 49 games in an injury-riddled campaign and a miserable campaign.
Worst year of his career.
By far.
Yeah. So, we'll see, man. It's going to be fascinating. Ottawa, Montreal battling it out for who can get to the bottom quicker and how can they screw up whatever they have.
And what faith in either franchise would you reasonably have that they can turn these things around quickly?
None.
I mean,
I wouldn't have any.
There's no reason.
I'm not saying that as a guy in Toronto who's just, you know, being a blowhard on the air and trying to be a hater. I just don't see it. I do not see a light at the end of either tunnel. Don't see it.
Even in a league where George McPhee built a Stanley Cup finalist on scraps, I don't see it.
No, me neither. Dave Feschuk in here from the Star. Mark Sacchino will join us, our buddy from Golf Talk Canada. That airs tonight between 7 and 9. The PGA Tour comes out with a new schedule starting next year. And how does he feel about the idea of Phil taking on Tiger, mic'd up for $10 million? We'll get into that conversation next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Golf Talk Canada airs tonight right here on TSN 1050, starting at 7 p.m. And a bit of a precursor, the host of Golf Talk Canada, Mark Sacchino, joining us in studio. What's happening, Mark?
Lots going on. Good to see both you gentlemen in person. Been a while.
Yeah, but
can't believe some of the crazy golf news popping this week. $10 million made-for-TV matches, new Canadian Open dates. Lots of news, lots going on. And, of course, a week away from the Open Championship. So.
Well, let's get to the Phil versus Tiger stuff first, because this is very, very appealing to me. I love this idea. I hope it actually happens. The report came out, I believe, over the weekend or earlier this week. Phil versus Tiger, $10 million pot. Both guys will be mic'd up. They'll play in Vegas. They're just working on a TV deal, working on sponsors. I love this. Quite frankly, I think this should terrify the PGA, because they're talking about this potentially developing into a bigger thing and more guys would potentially get involved. How do you feel about the idea, though, in general?
I think it's fun. I think, you know, it's going to gain interest. People are going to want to see it. Primetime TV, regardless of, with all due respect to Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth, and, you know, still the two biggest stars in the game. It's a shame this wasn't 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing. And you guys will recall the made-for-TV IMG events in the past, like the Battle at Bighorn and things of that nature. They just never really gained traction. But then again, the pot and the purse was never like this before. This is serious dough. I find it interesting, too, that this all stems from that casual poking fun at each other at the Players' Championship in the press conference when they got paired together, and Phil jokingly spit out, said, oh, let's just bypass a tournament and play for $10 million. And all of a sudden, here we are.
I don't know. With Phil, you wonder how casual that was. Yeah, this has probably been in the works for some time. And here's where my skeptical eye goes up, though, Zacchino. Like, am I really to believe that they're actually going to have Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson show up at the same place to play golf, and one of them's got a zero guarantee? Like, only one guy's getting paid here? Like, I know they're going to tell us that.
Yeah.
They're going to tell us only one guy's getting paid, and that's going to make it somehow the stakes higher and the moment bigger. But I just can't believe that they're not both going to get paid somehow out of this.
I have a hard time with that, too. I have a hard time with that just with their camps. You know, like, their managers, their agents, their peoples are probably not going to want that or allow that, really.
Right.
So I got to imagine there is backdoor appearance guarantee somewhere. But from a public standpoint, you're right. From a purse standpoint, from a TV standpoint, it's currently, anyway, being positioned as winner-take-all. Not the details yet. We kind of have a rough idea that it might be at Shadow Creek. It's going to be in Las Vegas. And, you know, we have a concept of what they're talking about. But who knows how this might morph and change a little by the time we actually get to the day.
Well, and I don't have a problem with that. That's like boxing matches, man. Both of them know they're getting paid going into it. But I want to know that someone is going to get paid more. I want to have that kind of HBO 24/7 buildup just to see how they're preparing for it. And I don't know how committed these two guys will be to that, but I think it would be wise for them to do that. And I do believe the most integral part here is one that we believe they're both committed to. It's that they're both mic'd up. They have to be mic'd up. That's what can change everything here. I really think this can be a game changer, because if they're mic'd and you have full access and it's not censored and you allow these guys to actually get heated because they're competitive, and if there is some money on the line, you're going to get a unique experience. You're going to get it.
Are you skeptical of that?
Well, here's my thing. Like, what is Tiger Woods ever going to say to anybody? Like, Tiger Woods gets into that competitive bubble. He doesn't talk to anybody. He barely talks to his caddy. I don't think Tiger Woods is going to give you, like, world-class repartee with Phil. Phil might give you something, but Tiger's been a wooden personality in competition from day one.
Right, but if he sprays one into the trees and he's falling apart and he's mic'd up, it's not even about what he's saying to Phil. What's he saying to himself?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah,
like, it's
yeah.
different.
I always find it interesting, too, from my standpoint. I love eavesdropping in on the conversation with the caddies and what they're really talking about, what they're really going through and whatnot. Now, again, it's going to be hard to simulate care. And when you have made the kind of money that these guys have made, can they simulate something that really matters by just throwing money at it versus having somebody mic'd up in the final round of a major championship where these guys are playing for history? I don't know. That's still something to be debated. And I'm not so sure you can put enough money on the table to simulate that. I don't. Do I think it's going to be fun? Do I want to see it? Sure, yes. kind of like a modern day version of Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, really, where we took two celebrity golfers, two high profile guys, picked a great golf venue, threw some money on the line, and turned it into a TV show. This is kind of just hyped up.
But that, as you say, that was back when golfers actually needed the money.
Needed the dough.
Exactly. Yeah. So Jack Nicklaus would get on a plane and go play Arnold Palmer on Shell World of Golf because he needed the cash. These guys are just so rich.
Right.
I think you're right. It's going to be hard to manufacture the stakes. I guess other than just egos on the line and a national television audience.
Right, but I think what you're hoping for here, and this is where I lean more towards Mickelson, although I'm pretty sure Tiger's got that history too, is these guys like to gamble.
Right.
I mean, that's where I understand your cynicism here. If a TV company's going to pay them both a lot of money, or if, you know, a lead sponsor is going to jump on board and pay them both a lot of money, I don't know what that is going to be worth in terms of what's actually on the line. They may look at it as we're playing with house money, so we don't have that edge. But if you're a gambler, that's what I'm hoping to see here.
Yeah.
Right? Is these guys are playing for the right to actually steal money from the other competitor, and these guys have a history against each other.
Which is why I think from a public standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, it has to be positioned as winner takes all.
Yes.
Right? Some guy leaves with nothing, whether you buy it or not. From the storyline of this, the Vince McMahon side of this, is somebody leaves with zero and someone leaves with $10 million.
See, like, it's interesting. Somebody had the idea that they should have, if they're going to have this, then you should have like an undercard to this too, right? Like smaller matches in the lead up to this.
Like a boxing, right?
So, but I'm like, to me, in some ways, it's not even about pro golfers. Like somebody had an idea, you would have like Michael Jordan against Charles Barkley. You know, they're both big. Charles is terrible, and Michael's an avid golfer, but not a pro golfer. But that the repartee there would be entertaining, right? Like, I would like to watch those.
And then you allow golf for the handicap to factor in as well, right? Charles has a chance at actually winning.
Right. Or, like, to me, the dream match would be Trump versus Obama. wouldn't that be something?
That would be great.
I'd much rather see Trump play Obama than Tiger play Phil. That's just me.
Well, you know, and there's other things at play here, too. It is very hard to fill 4 hours of TV with one guy playing against another guy, especially if they go in a match play component here and one guy gets lopsided against the other. This thing could be over on 13, 14 holes. Then what do you do? So having undercard, so to speak, like to steal more terms from boxing, not a bad idea. You got to fill out a broadcast here. So creating some angles and some other matches that you can go to in the broadcast might really help.
But I also think this is where if it's about gambling, and I don't get the impression like that's what they're trying to necessarily promote, but we all know different games you can play on the course.
Right.
You know, you can create par threes. You got to, you know, hit the green to qualify, and then whoever gets in two or less putts, then you put more money on the line. If the game's, you know, if it's dormy or whatever through 12 or 13, you double down for the rest of the holes. You know, that's the kind of stuff that needs to be available to make sure that it is compelling from a gambling perspective, really, throughout the whole event. Mark Zucchino in studio from Golf Talk Canada, airing tonight 7 to 9 right here on TSN 1050. All right, let's talk about the news in the PGA about the schedule for the 2018-2019 season. I love this, that they're moving the PGA Championship up. I always hated the break between the Masters and the U.S. Open. They're moving the championship up to the month of May. So we're going to have majors April, May, June, July.
Yeah.
I like it.
I love it, too. I love it, too. I like the Players' Championship moving back to March to kind of give you that ramp up. And I think, you know, from an economic standpoint, when you're asking FedEx to cut that check and then asking them to go head-to-head with the start of the NFL season, you know, that's a hard ask. And now moving the playoffs away from that and kind of giving its own stage in August where, you know, more often than not, you know, you're competing against baseball and really nothing else. You know, obviously we have, you know, certain years where certain things pop up, but it really gets to showcase those playoffs. I love the way this lines up. I think it's wins across the board. I still wish they took some time off, a little bit more time off. I think you can oversaturate the market with golf. I think they've done that. From a PGA Tour standpoint, they're going to say, well, if we're not throwing a tournament where millions of dollars are on the line, someone else around the world is, and they'll go there. That's their attitude towards it. So I get it. But overall, it's huge wins. And I think it's still a minor win here, a good positive move for the RBC Canadian Open. Is it going to change the universe? No. Is it going to help? Sure. I think it's going to really help when the U.S. opens on the Eastern Seaboard, which we're not going to see next year, but we're going to see the following year.
Yeah, because as listeners may or may not know, it's going right now. The Canadian Open is positioned the week after the British Open, or the Open Championship, as we probably should call it, which has been tough, right, to get a field. Now it's going to be the week before the U.S. Open. And I was down at the Abbey this week, and they're talking about, hey, could we turn it into something like the Scottish Open, where people are essentially going over to tune up for the British Open the week before the Scottish Open, in the Scottish Open. Could the Canadian Open become the tune-up for the U.S. Open? That's the dream.
Right.
Because there's guys like Phil who play every year before the U.S. Right. Open. Well, there's guys like Rory who have played.
You look at the field just this year in Memphis, and just a couple of names like Phil, Brooks Koepka, Henrik Stenson, guys that just wanted to play heading into the U.S. Open, that if it was the Canadian Open this year, it would, that's where they would have been, getting ready for the U.S. Open. Now, next year, it's in Pebble. Time zone change might be a little different. But, you know, three of the next 6 years, it's on the Eastern Seaboard, starting with Wingfoot in 2020. And I think that's when you're really going to see the benefits. And the European Tour, Keith Pelley's just done a brilliant job to what you're referring to, Dave. We go Irish Open, Scottish Open, Open Championship. Like, it just, common sense, it just makes too much sense not to do it. And it's worked for them. Mm-hmm. So why not for the Canadian Open?
Well, don't you think it's imperative then that the Canadian Open travels basically wherever the U.S. Open is going to be? Like, can't they sync it up? So, well, if they're in the East, you be in the East. If you're in the Midwest, somehow be in the Midwest.
And there is the dilemma, because RBC, from a sponsorship standpoint, wants the championship in Southern Ontario. They want it near their client base. The fiscal model works here. They've had problems when they've moved around the country and other places, just getting beaten up. Golf Canada taking just a beating on our national championship. But maybe down the road, when they see this starting to line up like we're talking, maybe those are the years where once in a while we'll get to move the national championship. We're not being told that right now. We're being told the complete opposite. It ain't right. Going anywhere.
They're
going
to do their own thing.
Yeah.
And you got Voigt. I know Stephen Ames, you know, who's based in Calgary and a Western guy, one of our best players ever on tour, immediately tweeted out after the Open was announced, the date was announced, that they got to move it out west. Like, why hasn't it been back to Vancouver in so long?
The one thing RBC, you know, and they're not talking about this publicly, but what we've heard within the golf community is, if it's going to move at any point in the near future, that it will more than likely reach Alberta before it reaches BC, because of RBC's network of clientele and just the financial hub that is now Calgary outside of Toronto, that's a more likely landing spot for the RBC Canadian Open. Of course, Mickelson National still kind of, you know, on the radar a little with that new course out in Alberta. So we'll see. But don't look for it anytime soon, guys. I'd be shocked in the next 5 years if it wasn't somewhere between Hamilton and Toronto.
Interesting. All right, Mark, good seeing you, man. Thanks
yeah, great to see you.
In,
thanks,
buddy.
Good to see you both.
We'll catch you at 7 p.m.
Thanks, boys.
Golf Talk Canada coming up. He is Mark Cicchino. He joined us here in studio on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Jay's in Atlanta tonight, and John Heyman reporting on where Jay Happ could end up. We'll tell you about that next. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Yankees Road Plus, fading the Baltimore Orioles. Stroman back in the mound, coming off a tough start, tough season, quite frankly, but I think he bounces back tonight. I'll go under the number, the Jays-Braves game tonight. And Seattle's paying 210 in Anaheim, so I'll take Seattle tonight. Throw down 20, score $103. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. John Heyman of Fangraphs, I believe it is, MLB Insider, been around for a long time. He tweeted out earlier this hour that the Yankees have Jay Happ near the top of their realistic rotation trade options, but to this point have found the asking price on Happ to be a bit high, as it should be. I mean, Happ's last two starts, we had Steve Phillips on in the previous hour, and he's like, it's really hurt him. He didn't even get through the third inning against the Yankees over the weekend.
Yeah.
It's really bloated his numbers. But he still had a very good year outside of the past couple of starts. And how many options are really out there in terms of pitchers that are available? And if you're trading him within the division and the Yankees know they're going to the playoffs, they need help in the rotation. Once you get past Severino and Sabathia, can fall off. You've got to take advantage of that.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, hey, you've got the a limited resource here. There's not a ton of supply of ready starters that are on the, you know, on the block to be moved. And you know the Yankees have the prospects and the resources to pay you. So you got to hold out for top dollar here. You cannot be taking discounts at this point in the season. Because the Yankees, as you point out, as good as they are, as dominant as they've been, you look at their rotation, you go Severino and you go Sabathia, who happens to be 37 years old, and you go to Sonny Gray. Who's been awful. You know, what is his ERA now? 5.85? I mean, it is not looking good. So
they need help.
They need help in a big way. And you know that they're in this incredible arms race with the Boston Red Sox in an American League that also has the not so diminutive Houston Astros. I mean, they need help and they're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be able to extract from them the kind of stuff that you talk about wanting to extract, which is stuff that can rebuild this farm system, stuff that can help in the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. era.
You have 3 weeks to work out the trade, too. Like, of course you're going to ask for more. The Jays may not get it, but you're going to ask for more, because I think the Yankees need probably two starters.
Yeah.
So even if between now and the end of the month they go out and acquire somebody else, there's still a good chance they're going to circle back and try to pick up Hap.
Oh, without a doubt.
So if you're the Blue Jays, man, you've got to take advantage of whatever leverage you might have.
I got news for you. Why are so many people talking about Jay Hap? It's because there aren't that many other options. No. There aren't that many other guys out there that the Yankees can grab to, you know, fulfill the obligation of improving their starting rotation, which we know they're going to do.
Yep, absolutely. World Cup semifinal number 2 tomorrow. It's England-Croatia at 2 p.m. France is through to the World Cup final. That will air right here on TSN Radio Sunday morning at 11 a.m. But England-Croatia at 2 p.m. tomorrow. And according to Wheeler, if England wins, pandemonium in the city.
The streets will be shut down all over Toronto.
Yes.
Leaf-esque celebrations all over the GTA, according to our man Wheels, who happens to be of English heritage.
A very, very significant diehard England fan. So it's not like he's jaded whatsoever.
Maybe he'll be the guy shutting them all down. Like, he may just be on a rampage.
He said he's going out tomorrow night.
He's going out tomorrow night.
So that game's on at 2. We're coming on right after that.
Looking forward to it.
He is Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. I'm Brian Hayes. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.